their evil foes are very much aware that though he's just a boy, no grown-up can compare with Robin, the wonderful boy wonder. If Batman's in a fix and it looks like it's the end, he really doesn't worry, he knows he can depend on that fearless teenage hero who is his closest friend. Robin, the wonderful boy wonder, he fights for law and order.
Hey, welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shops. We're broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio, podcasting at comicbookdaily.com and getthepointradio.com. I'm Walter Duraglia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I'm Chris Owen, professor at Hamilton's Mohawk College, and we are here to talk to you all about the wonderful world of comic books and things that happen in the comic book industry.
The wonderful, wonderful, wonderful world of comics.
Wonderful.
And we're joined, as always, by our illustrious producer, Shecky Feldstein, a.k.a. Marty Berthelmer.
Shecky.
Glad to be here. Glad you guys.
You don't look like you're glad to be here.
Well, I'm just I'm taking inventory around me because every time I'm gone for a week, I feel like you guys are stealing the place. The screws are coming out of the walls. You know,
Screws.
Long as the place isn't burnt down, we're okay.
Yeah,
we're all right.
Yeah,
we're all right. We're back for another week. We're going to be produced properly this week. We're going to be engineered properly this week. We're going to pull off one heck of a show.
Are you saying that I don't engineer you properly,
Chris? That's not what I'm saying at
all. Oh, phew.
It's going to be a hell of a show. What I meant to say is we're gonna one up last week.
Well, you know, Christmas is coming, and so you have to be careful with what you say because
this is an early gift to you.
Santa is watching. Santa is watching you.
He's always watching.
He's judging. Yeah.
He's judging.
You know what? The Bible says don't judge. And there Santa is sitting on his little perch.
That's so true, you know?
You know, saying, hey, look at Billy over there.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah. So true.
Anyway.
Judgy McJudgerson. Listen,
all right.
we do have to talk about comic books this week. Shecky, do we have a sponsor for this week's New This Week?
You know we do, Chris.
For this week's New This Week?
Do you like the way I said that?
No.
No.
This week's New This Week, brought to you by Paul Rudd's son, who is more likely to play the Ant-Man if it gets delayed any further.
Oh, very true. Very, very true. We're going to talk about Ant-Man later in the show.
Yes, we are.
It's
very topical, that topic.
Topical. It really is. Topical,
that
topic.
That topic is so topical.
You know, the
topical cream I got for that
that itch thing that you had. Yeah.
Did that go away, by the way?
Well, no, I spread it to Chris, so he's continuing the legacy now.
I just get freezing to get it off now.
Nice.
I know. Yeah.
Nice.
Listen, we are here to talk about New This Week, comics that are appearing in your local comic book store, or sorry, I guess you should say at your local comic book store, this week. Every Wednesday, it's like Christmas, and we just decided to pick a few of the smatterings of that are on the newsstand today.
Sure.
So the first one I've got up here. Now, here's the thing. So
here's
you know what?
I'm
gonna maybe I should wait for this one. I'm gonna wait for this one. This will be
that.
My last.
There's the teaser.
That was a teaser.
There goes the thing. Not Marvel's the thing. Listen, first one I want to talk about is Harley Quinn from DC Comics, and this is Harley Quinn number 12. I bring it up for two reasons. Actually, three reasons. The first two reasons is Power Girl's on the cover.
Wow.
With Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
Power Girl,
I notice, is bent forward.
She's bent forward. She's
what is she like picking up, she drop a dime or what?
She's actually carrying Harley Quinn in the comic.
It's convenient
on the cover.
She's bent over to do something.
Yeah. Well, you know, it helps to sell books that way when you can show lots of cleavage.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So, you know, great book. This is, of course, written by Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti and with art by John Timms and Chad Harden. I really like this book. I mean, how could I not, though? I'm a sucker for Power Girl, so.
Sucker.
And I do like Harley Quinn. But you know what? Even better than that.
Whoa.
Hold
even,
on.
Whoa.
Even
whoa.
Better than that.
Go.
Well, almost better than that.
Yeah, keep going.
There's the Harley Quinn variant. For all you Lego fans out there, DC has done a Harley Quinn Lego character.
That's cute.
And it's on the cover of Harley Quinn number 12.
Oh.
Just
so,
a matter of
you know,
line.
It's kind of cool. Like, she's got her sassy little pose. And, you know, this is something that, you know, I'm not a speculating man. But I would say that something like this could eventually become worth tens of dollars.
Tens of dollars.
You know, like,
I got to speculate. Speculating man.
Speculating man.
Speculating
guys,
man.
I came back and brought the music with me for a reason.
Oh, sorry. But don't you think, Walt? Like, I mean, that's like it's a Lego cover. It's Harley Quinn, who's a hot character.
It looks, it, yeah. It looks great. You know, I wish it said Highland on the cover.
Yeah. True enough. Yeah. Hey, then we can get Greg in here.
That's a good shout out to our boy, Greg Highland.
Shout out to our Hamiltonian homie and Lego artist, Greg Highland.
Yeah. True.
Who should have done this cover. Greg Highland, Lego artist. Never got a dinner. Hey, listen, Harley Quinn number 12, too unique and variable. That's wrong.
Variable.
Two unique and different covers.
That's right. There you go.
Available at your local comic book shop.
Yep.
Today.
I love it. Next up on the Hit Parade, we've got Spider-Woman number 1. And this is I love this guy's name, Dennis Hopeless. I can't believe he ever got a job because hopeless.
Is that what he puts on his resume?
Yeah. I think so. Greg Land.
I'm going to give this kid a shot.
I'm going to give him a shot. He's hopeless.
He's hopeless.
Well, why are you giving him a shot? Because he's hopeless. I could go on. But listen.
Please don't.
Your favorite, Greg Land, does the art.
Oh, Greggy. Yeah.
Old Greggy Poo, as you like to call him. This is...
Greg Photoshop Land.
Well, okay, for those who are listening to our show and they're not too sure what we're talking about, Greg Land is one of these artists, fantastic artists. But
great artist.
He really likes to see, he takes covers of magazines and incorporates them as the poses into his comics. Mm-hmm. And some people say
that's
stealing. I don't think it is. You know what?
Hey there, Michelangelo. Why don't you try to draw that naked chick without her standing in front of you?
It's a great point. Yes.
Yeah, anybody can draw a naked chick with her standing in front of you.
That's a great point.
Okay,
you ask her to leave, you perv?
It's embarrassing. Point of order, Michelangelo was a sculptor, but...
Leonard. Hey there. Anyway, you know what I'm saying.
We
know what I'm saying. We all need something in front of us.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I know what I'd like to have in front of me right now.
Right.
Listen, okay. Spider-Woman number 1. This is a great jumping on point. It's interesting book. It's actually got – it does – Marvel's really heavily involved in this whole multiverse thing right now. And that's the
– I haven't got a clue what it is.
Okay, well, okay. Do you remember,
don't even try to tell me, please.
No, very, very briefly.
Okay.
Very briefly. Right. You know how
– ruin it for me, though.
No.
Yeah, because he's ready to read all of these comics.
Sure.
Right now, Marvel – the true Marvel universe that you and I know of
– 616?
See, you already know about it. That's called 616. 616. Whatever, however you want to call it.
I said it wrong.
But there's all these different multiverses around there that are saying...
What's your favorite? 512?
69.
I've read that one.
Yes, it's a good one. It's
good one.
No, actually, 61... I'm a classic guy. I like 616. Yeah. Listen, but they're kind of going the way that DC did with the Crisis with all these Infinite Earths and all that kind of thing. So now we have Grant Morrison's brainchild with the multiverse.
Uh-huh.
And, they're... So Spider-Woman is in this, but there's also... I didn't realize they have all these different type of spider characters, I'll call it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're calling them the spiders and the spider friends.
From Mars.
So like there's a character called Silk and, of course, Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
But then there's also a 1930s Spider-Man.
Oh, really?
Yes.
The spider.
Kind of like the spider. Yeah, spider. Yeah, exactly.
Someone is called Silk. I'm sorry.
Yes.
So he's just the cool man.
Actually,
he
Silk
plays real cool.
That would have been much better.
That's
Silk,
cool, dude.
Silk is a woman in this one, so it would have been. I like your idea better.
That's ruined everything I had
smooth.
Going for me.
Hey, Spider-Woman. By the way, guys.
What?
Spider-Woman number 1.
The original?
Remember like Spider-Woman number 1, the Marvel one from the 1970s?
Yeah.
The one that, I would say, 5 years ago, you couldn't sell. You can't sell this damn thing.
Yeah.
You got 10 of them in your bin. You got them at $5.
You're lucky to get $5 for
them. Yeah, you can't sell the stupid things. Recently, a 9.8, which is a really nice copy.
Yep.
Graded by that CGC company.
Yep.
Got something like $2,500.
Wow.
Like
well,
over $2,000.
That's crazy.
I apologize. Are you not talking about Ms. Marvel?
Oh, I said the wrong thing.
Oh, you're talking about Spider-Woman.
Spider-Woman. But no, even the 9.8s, but you're right, the Miss Marvel got $2,500. Yeah. But the Spider-Womans are also like getting hundreds of dollars in the
9.8s. Which still, you couldn't give them away.
You couldn't give them away before.
I hear you.
It's unbelievable.
I know, it's crazy.
I think we got, if we didn't have Shecky here last week, that would have got through the censor board.
You know what? There would have been one bitter Bitterman.
Yeah.
Leaving a comment of some kind.
The funniest part of the show, your Overstreet advisor didn't know what the hell he was talking about.
Has that guy even read a comic?
Man, he thinks Michelangelo is a painter. I'm never listening to this show again.
Again.
All right, listen.
Hey,
Spider-Woman
number one.
Yes.
Is available at your local comic book shop today.
Last up, I want to talk about that other comic book that...
Sure you
was
did,
this
Chris.
Your favorite that you were savoring over there?
Well, yeah.
And
so this,
you'll
see why. Mm. I want to talk about the other comic book that
no one ever talks about
by the same guy that writes for The Walking Dead,
right?
Bob Kirkman, and he does a comic. He's been doing this comic called Invincible for 115 issues.
Yeah,
and
1948.
Yeah, he does 2 issues a year. it's astounding to me that here's a guy that has a highly successful Walking Dead series, the TV show, and Invincible's, I mean, it's up to volume 20 in graphic novels.
Yeah.
You know, it's hardly getting any press at all.
No play.
It's a superhero comic, uh-huh. and it's a great read.
Mm-hmm.
Never got a dinner. Really? I mean, I know I'm going to get flack for that. I realize that there are a core group of people.
Strong core,
yeah. Cult following. Uh-huh. But, you know, the average Joe does not pick this book up.
Yeah. And that came first. And Kirkman, you know, you could say he cut his teeth on this,
yep.
his storytelling. But you're right. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, maybe it's the fact that, you know, we'll talk about this a little bit later. But is there like a brand awareness to superheroes? Is there like if the superhero belongs to Image?
Yeah. I think you're right.
What I mean?
I think you're right because
unless
someone takes the
Marvel
risk,
could take the stupidest ass superhero in the history of the world and make him a Marvel one.
Unless someone takes a financier takes the risk and makes a kick-ass movie like uh-huh. Kick-Ass,
yeah.
you know,
yeah,
you know, on a low budget compared to say the $300 million for Avengers or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then happens to maybe score a mild success or make their money back. Really, it's tough to boost like an Image property.
When I think of superhero comics, I never think of Image.
Neither do I, and that's maybe the problem.
And
with
I think you're right. I think I can't. I have a problem with reading a superhero comic. Well, that is true. But I have a problem with reading a superhero comic that's not Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
Yet I'm sure they're great, you know. I mean, I don't know. Like, I can't get into it. I can't. It's a style of writing that doesn't fit the same pattern.
You're onto it. You're onto the same vibe I'm on.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Invincible number 115 from Image, available at your local comic book shop today. Head into your local comic book shop today. There are just, I can't even explain.
Maybe about 4,000 new comics this week.
It's unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they may even have them outside. They can't fit. So head into your local comic book shop.
All right, listen, let's have a quick musical interlude, and then we'll get back to more comic talk. That's what maybe we just call the show instead. Comic talk.
Coffee talk.
All right. What do you got cooked up for us there, Marto?
You know, I figure let's just get it out of the way. Let's get the crants.
Nice. I like it. All right. Let's hear it.
All right.
Love it.
filling the airwaves with comic book magic.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I like that.
Taking that bass for a walk, you know?
One day when I had my students all, working away silently, they had group projects.
You actually had a day like that?
Yeah, it actually happens, yeah. And I actually played this in the background, and it was cool. People were like, hey, what's that? I was like, oh, it's actually a Spider-Man theme song.
Yeah, Chris.
Yeah, loved it.
Chris,
loved it.
Spreading the gospel.
Spreading the gospel, that's right.
All right.
That's your cue.
That was a pregnant pause.
Working with professionals here, you know.
Yeah. You guys intro me. You know,
sorry.
Taking a bite of my bagel belt over here. So we're getting into industry news is what we're talking about.
We are, yeah, All right.
So jumping us, catapulting us in industry news, brought to you by zombie football players. Let's face it, apparently the NFL could use the publicity stint to get back on top.
That's very true. Very true.
And that's a
great, you know what? You got to be on top. You got to be on top.
If you're not on top, you're on the bottom.
That is true. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Unless it's an NFL pylon.
Unless it's an NFL pylon. You do not want to be on that. Listen, you know, that is a great segue into our first topic of industry news. Walt, you and I were talking about it before the show. Walking Dead apparently is beating out football.
Yeah, so
beating up on football, really.
Yeah, it's beating on football.
Yeah.
Walking Dead, the Sunday just passed. It for the third week in a row topped Sunday Night Football's ratings.
It's crazy.
And I thought we'd talk about it in the sense that, you know, remember? I mean, we've covered Walking Dead since it went on air,
and
it was like a fledgling thing, and then it had a good strong core base and then from the graphic novel, and then just your average Joe or was just jumping on because these were great stories and great, you know, theater, as you'd say. And now it's to the point where, you know, an old staple like, you know, Sunday Night Football, it can't beat The Walking Dead.
Can't compete.
And so it's like, you know, like comic book properties are now usurping traditional American untouchable, you know, program.
Yeah, and I love it.
Yeah, isn't
I love
it great?
It. Yeah, I love
isn't
it. You know what? I love
now, you guys are Walking Dead. You and Shecky are Walking Dead fans.
Yeah, big
fans. You guys caught up.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
So you've seen the last episode.
Yep.
So for it to keep going, it drew 9.2 million from the key demo and 14.1 million viewers over the night.
Right.
Is it as good? Is it getting better? Is it still fresh? Is it still like what's going on?
I would say it's pretty good right now. There's a little bit of flashback kind of stories going on.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of jumping in time around. Like it's based on being in one sort of place, but there's other stories going on in different areas, and it's before that timeline up until the present. And so it's jumping back forth. It's nice. It's kind of like you're getting multiple different scenarios, kind of at the same time. The lead up for the week up until that. It's pretty good.
All right.
It's very entertaining. Like, it keeps you kind of,
so they're,
you know,
they're doing it right. They're keeping it fresh. Yeah. They're keeping it going. It's still growing. It's just like, I find it incredible that the property has, and what the best part about it is it hasn't kind of, you know, exploded in popularity.
No,
it's
not
it's
yet.
Just
no.
been a strong, growth, strong growth every year, which is more sustainable.
Well, you know what's funny? So, I found the last two episodes not that strong. However, they're leading. There's only two episodes left, so they're leading up into an end point because they like to have that mid-season, mid-year break kind of thing.
Yeah.
So and then they'll come back again.
It's like a crescendo.
Yeah,
or a climax or some sort.
So there's
cliffhanger usually, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As I said, the past few episodes I really thought were kind of boring. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's because I think they're really trying to stretch out the characters and the storyline with the flesh out the characters a little bit more. It's still good. Don't get me wrong. It's still good. It's still better than a lot of the kife that's out there on TV or on TV right now. But you know, it's here's the thing. So,
here's the thing.
It's a this show. My wife hates horror movies. Uh-huh. She doesn't watch anything that's horrific.
My wife hates horror movies too.
You know, and yet she loves watching The Walking Dead. So I think there's something about the soap opera-ness of The Walking Dead that appeals to a demographic that doesn't normally.
So The Walking,
like Walking
Dead.
Dead.
What you're saying is it's not just gore for the sake of gore. It is storytelling,
right?
With
right.
gore happened to be
part
of it,
and that's the kind of the brilliance that Robert Kirkman has done with the comic, and that's parlayed into the show. Mm-hmm. Is that it's never really been about the zombies; it's been about the characters and how they deal with the zombies around it.
Right.
And you know, But it's a show that pulls no punches, too, right? So all of a sudden, your favorite character might be dead tomorrow, right? So it's something that, you know, I mean, there's a couple characters that you'll know will never die. Mm-hmm. There's going to be public outrage if Daryl ever gets killed.
They've got t-shirts, you know, if Daryl dies,
is
I
Michonne
stop watching.
Still around?
You
know?
Michonne is still around, yeah.
Can't kill her, probably, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say Michonne, Rick, and Daryl. I would say if any of those three dies, there's going to be rioting. Yeah. Carl, yeah, who cares about Carl? Yeah.
Oh, look at that. Harsh words.
You
harsh
can make you sure it's anti-Carl train.
I like it.
Here.
I like it. Forget, okay,
but it's
forget
great
Carl.
To see, it's great to see. It's great to see that even, you know, press releases are noting that Walking Dead is beating football. Right.
Yeah,
an
this
American
is great.
Institution.
Yeah. Right. And Sunday night football, too, right? It's not just football.
Yeah.
It's Sunday night football, which is huge, right?
I know.
It's not the mid-afternoon Sunday game where you might be out doing something else.
And you had the New England Patriots versus the Indianapolis Colts.
That's
the
right.
The Colts
have
the best, you know, the hottest quarterback in the league.
Yeah.
And the Patriots are the best team currently.
Like
so, I mean, it was a big game. Yeah. It wasn't like it was flipping, I don't know, Tampa Bay versus
Jacksonville
or something that, right? Yeah. So that's excellent news.
Hey, that is a true story of Revenge of the Nerds right there.
Pretty
enough,
well.
Eh?
Hey, speaking of
nerds.
Actually, there is no segue.
It was kind of nerdy.
Yeah.
Speaking of whatever.
Stuff.
So this is a really cool story.
I like this story.
Yeah, I read this and you and I talked about it before the show, and we kind of just were flabbergasted by it. So, you know, the old Universal Studios.
Yeah, like
Bela Lugosi, Dracula, Frankenstein, werewolf.
Boris Karloff,
the whole thing. That whole, like, remember the old, what was the magazine called that, you know?
Famous Monsters of Filmland. Yeah, Forrest J. Ackerman's Famous Monsters of Filmland.
Yeah, it was like the cult core 1960s magazine for movie fans.
Yeah.
The Mummy.
Remember there's an artist by the name of Basil Gogos or Gogos. I don't know how to say his name properly. Gogos. And he had these awesome painted covers of, like, the Wolfman or the Phantom of the Opera or whoever it happened to be. And anyways, awesome covers. And so, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So we're hearing out of the Universal Studios that owns kind of all – that made all these movies before.
Well, they call them the Universal Monsters.
Universal Monsters, right. And you go to a local comic book shop and you'll be able to buy articulated action figures from the Universal Monsters, right?
Yeah.
The Mummy, Dracula, Frankenstein, Werewolf, the Invisible Man.
Yeah.
So Universal Studios has announced that they are going to revamp all their monster line, take the horror out of the monster line.
Okay.
And put action adventure into the monster line, a la Marvel. So they're basically going to superheroize their whole Marvel line.
Right.
I'm sorry, not Marvel.
Their whole horror monster line. But your flub there is correct because they're doing exactly the Marvel thing, right?
Right. So Marvel is so influential now in terms of everybody's just like jaw dropped looking at what Marvel's doing and going, holy cripe.
Yeah.
Look at all the money these guys are making.
Let's get a piece of that pie.
Let's get a piece of that pie. What we're doing isn't working.
Yeah.
Let's turn whatever we have into superheroes.
Right.
And
because apparently superheroes is where it's at.
Yeah. And let's reboot.
Yeah. It's got nothing to do. No, I think the problem here. I know we're going to rag on this a little bit.
Yeah.
But part of the problem here is clearly they haven't seen like Ghost Rider or some of their awful superhero movies out there.
Normally, if you're at a meeting,
you know,
if you're at an executive meeting, listen, JB.
Did they have that radio announcer microphone?
Look there, JB.
Dateline, 1930.
Listen, pour me another bottle of scotch. Or glass. Sorry, pour me a glass.
No, that's
bottle.
Correct.
I like the whole bottle, yeah.
The bottle into one large glass.
Look here, JB. These superhero things are really taking off. Let's change our Betty Crocker line into superheroes. Right? So, I mean, that's what's happening right here. Really.
Okay.
Yeah, but how do you spin it? You know, Frankenstein's monster, you know, stronger than an ox,
yeah.
uglier
yeah.
than a mule.
Yes, exactly.
And slower than molasses going up a hill.
Exactly, yeah. And, but, you know, but here, okay, here's my problem.
Here's
and
the problem.
We very briefly talked about this. Is so, you know, I love how, okay, so Marvel comes out with this idea of getting all these characters together for a movie,
right?
Right.
Yeah.
And now Universal is saying, hey, we should do this thing, the same idea, get
right.
all these characters together for a movie.
Uh-huh.
Got news for you fellas. Marvel beat you to that, too, years
well,
ago.
Here's the thing. So here's Marvel the thing. Just a really quick recap for the listener. It was Amazing Spider-Man number 96, the drug issue, Stan Lee,
right.
you know, that ushered in a new era of comic book publishing. Because before then, we were slaves to the code from the 1950s that was in place because of all the graphic horror kind of stuff.
Right.
So when Amazing Spider-Man number 96 came out, and it was an anti-drug issue, and it came out without a code, and then the code realized they were wrong because it was anti-drug. So you can have drugs in the thing if it was anti-drug.
Right.
So they loosened the code.
Right.
Marvel came out with an onslaught of classic horror characters because you were allowed to go back to the horror genre, which comic book publishers weren't.
We're not allowed
to. They had the Monster Frankenstein. They had the Tomb of Dracula. They had Werewolf by Night.
Yeah.
They had the Living Mummy.
Yeah.
You know, and even in Marvel Premiere number 28, they had the Legion.
Legion of Monsters.
Of Monsters.
Right? So this
right.
is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So Marvel, back in like, what, 1978 or something like
73,
that?
73, 4, 5.
Even that early,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
They decided, let's get all these cool Universal Monster characters together
and make
a team out of
because all these characters, or most of them, are public domain.
Right.
So here's the thing. Universal will go out and make these movies.
Right.
3 years later, Marvel will make
make better
ones,
versions.
Better versions, right? Yeah. You know, so
you know, we've got these characters, and I hear superheroes are big. Let's make Dracula a superhero.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's
you know what though? Here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
Is that yes? They're public domain. The laws on public domain didn't come into play until like the '60s, I believe. And then they decided, well, for all properties that are still existing that weren't really copyrighted, it's 50 years after the original creator's death that everything becomes public domain. So all the songs, like hit songs from the 50s and the 60s, nowadays, if they passed away and they didn't have like a sale of copyright or like a sale it becomes public domain. So now you can start just using 50 songs, classic tunes and swing and big band stuff, whatever you want, right?
No,
When you make a film, though, from, like, the 30s, and you're taking someone else's The Mummy or Frankenstein, like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and you're making it into a film, like you know, as Universal did, right? Because Universal was huge for making all those horror films and everything. Like, it's so solidly tangible, like, in something. It's almost like you should have a copyright on the fact that you made the motion picture version of, you know, Frankenstein's monster, and you should have some... I don't know if it worked like that. I don't think it did.
No.
And so anyone can... But you know what I mean? Like
And I think like Chris says, it was the Universal monster.
Yeah.
So there may be some sort of public acceptance to...
To the Universal ones.
So if Universal does another monster, it's more credible.
But what I just find fascinating is the fact that they would just take a something that is so ingrained in pop culture and stuff like that and are willing to absolutely just turn it on its head because of what's happening right now in pop culture.
Right. I mean, and even this idea has been done before. Like, they had, like, cartoons where the characters of, like... you know, they remember there was, I think it was years ago, there's one called Drac Pack where it had like Dracula and the Wolfman and the mom and you know, Frankenstein's monster.
I remember when I was a kid, you know, I'm 28, so I'm thinking back maybe 15 years.
Yeah.
When there was a cartoon and it was all about the reincarnated King Tut, think.
Oh, yeah, little Tutankhamun or whatever it was called.
And so he had like four mummies that were like superhero guys and they like, with the strength of Ra, like the superpower and power up, and then
That was actually created by a local guy, the guy from Kitchener. What's his name now? Geez, you know, I can't remember. You know who I mean. He's
Kitchener Ken.
You know what? I'll think of it, and I'll get back to you.
Kitchener
I'll get
Ken.
Back to you. Anyways,
it's just fascinating, and it's like Like always when something like this happens, I always get emails.
Right.
So I say, because I emailed a couple of guys. Going, this is like absolutely fascinating. And I'm connected,
yeah,
as you know.
Yeah, I know. Very connected. Well, you got all those emails about the Star Wars ones.
You're
last
the most
week.
Connected guy that isn't in the mob, Walt.
Right. Yeah. And so I go, hey, Walt, I mean, this is prevalent through not just Hollywood, this Marvel phenomenon, but through all kind of entertainment and, you know, literary aspects and stuff like that. So I'm getting some emails. Did you know that there's plans to work the Shakespeare universe?
Oh, really?
Into like a superhero.
Nice. I like it.
So in England, there's a movement to put Romeo and Juliet,
yeah,
King Lear, and Macbeth.
Okay.
And they're going to make them like a superhero team called the Longfellows.
I like it.
And they're going to do some PSAs for the BBC. And the PSA, the message, I'm sorry.
BBC?
Yeah. Hold on, I have something stuck on our tooth, apparently. Oh, there, my God, look at the size of that thing. Imagine talking with that for the next 5 minutes.
What I imagine is Owen wearing it for the next 5 minutes.
It was painful to watch.
The whole Shakespeare movement, it's like, man, nobody's reading Shakespeare. We gotta Marvelize this.
Right, yes. You know, it's very true.
So
yeah.
Romeo and Juliet, King Lear and Macbeth are gonna be a superhero team called the Longfellows.
I like it.
They're gonna spread PSAs for the BBC about the pen is for the paper and not the mouth.
Oh, well, that's... pen is for the paper.
They've been having a problem in England because if you keep it in your mouth long enough, it explodes.
Yeah, and the Longfellows are certainly the ones to go out and spread that word. Yeah.
So it's like a PSA announcement to help the public.
I like it.
Don't keep it in your mouth too long. It'll explode.
Well, it's very true. Yeah, absolutely.
So, and using the Marvel... push.
Yes.
It's just brilliant.
Marvel got big push.
But it's not just the literary world.
Oh, no?
Really?
The porn world.
Oh, come on.
It's changing.
Come on.
I got it.
Is going to be a porn super team?
A porn super team. No more porn.
What?
There's no money in it. It's superheroes. So they're making a team.
You're right. Guys went from that to superheroes.
You're right.
Seika, Amber Lynn, Tracy Lords and Christy Canyon.
Oh, nice.
Are joining Pussy Galore.
Oh, I like that.
To form the Association of Super Sirens.
Oh, I like that. Association of Super Sirens.
ASS. And they are working. The working title for the film is called Close Shaves. And it's about
how we barely got out of that one alive. I've been nicked a few times before.
Yeah. It's about how the team narrowly escapes traps set by an Australian supervillain team called the Cabal of Crooked Kangaroos.
Is there an acronym there? Probably not. Probably not.
The Cabal of crooked kangaroos. Yeah. No, there absolutely isn't. But it's amazing, though, that you know, Marvel's influence is reaching Shakespeare. It's reaching porn.
Is there anywhere that will it ever end?
I don't know.
It's crazy.
Keep the emails coming, people. Yeah. Because
ground zero. You're here to hear it first.
You heard it here first.
All right. Well, you know what? I'm looking forward to seeing Close Shaves. Listen, we gotta have a musical intro.
Well, we can't continue after that. We need to take a shower.
All right, what you got for us there, Shecky?
You know, by popular request, and by that I mean demanded by you.
That's right.
We got some Wonder Woman.
I like it. Let's hear it.
The only hope for freedom and democracy is.
What?
Stop a bullet cold, make the axis fold.
I just, you know, forget about the words. I just think about Linda Carter.
Well, yeah, how can you not?
Yeah.
Right?
Great stuff. Yeah. Great tune.
Is she in close shave?
No.
No. Oh,
right. Never got a dinner.
Never got a dinner. No. Although I'd watch it if she was. Actually, yeah, I hope so I can end watching it anyways. listen, let's go on with some more industry news. Shecky, what you got for us?
Absolutely. Industry News Part 2 brought to you by the Invisible Man Underwear. When trying to find a gift for that special guy, buy him something that really fits.
No, it's true, yeah. Mm. Invisible Man Underwear. I like that.
Is she trying to say something?
listen, Walt, so, you know, we talked about Marvel previously. About how everybody wants to be Marvel, right?
Everybody wants to be Marvel
because they're all making their movies like Marvel.
You used to want to be like Mike.
Yeah, now be like, make mine Marvel.
Yeah, make mine Marvel.
Yeah. It's so true now because Marvel is now number one in licensing. So Marvel's top characters are bringing in far more licensing revenue than DC, according to numbers from the licensing letter.
Licensing letter.
Do you subscribe to that?
That's where I got this information from, Chris.
The big winner is, of course, Spider-Man, which accounts for $1.3
billion.
In global
billion
sales.
Dollars.
Yeah.
That's Spider-Man. A lot of bed sheets and long johns.
Yeah, no kidding. A lot of cobwebs. Mm. Avengers produced about $325 million in global sales in 2003.
Yeah.
Yet, here we go. So, you know what? DC's top character is Batman, which produces about $494 million.
So, $500 million.
Half
of what Spidey does.
Less than half.
Less than half of what Spidey does.
Almost a third.
It's kind of hard to believe, but not. Yeah. You know, I think because maybe, correct me if I'm wrong here, but
I'm
just guessing. Spidey skews younger.
Yes.
Which is more merchandisable.
Yes. Because Batman, although they do like to do younger, there's a stigma with Batman where it's become now this adult thing.
Yeah,
right?
It is. Yeah.
You know, Batman used to be
the whole Nolan movie trilogy, the whole Schneider story arcs lately.
We're talking
adult stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, he might be in close shaves, actually, Batman.
Probably, yeah. He should be. him and Robin. Mm. Superman accounts for about $277 million in sales. Now, what this is telling me, so hold on a second here.
What is it telling
you? Now, Disney licensing on the whole. So Disney has Star Wars.
Marvel.
And Disney themselves.
And Disney, like Mickey and Donald. And, yeah.
Okay, now I'm not going to tell you the numbers quite
Cinderella.
Yet. I'm not going to tell you the numbers quite yet. Uh-huh. But Warner also does all their stuff. Now they have
Warner has DC.
DC, Batman, Superman, Wonder as well Woman. As like Bugs Bunny.
Yeah,
Daffy all that
Duck.
Stuff. Yep, yep.
Foghorn, like listen to me when I'm talking to you, boy.
I say son. Disney licensing produced $41 billion in global sales.
$41 billion.
And Warner produced $6 billion.
Get out.
So like, you know, what's that? 15% of what Disney had?
That's impossible.
Yeah. So, you know, and clearly it's because of, you know, Star Wars and Marvel and Disney itself. But one of the things that I see a problem here with. So when you're talking about Warner Brothers sales, you know, Superman, Batman, big two, it seems, right? But then after that, what they should have, they should have like Wonder Woman, and you know. Then after that, I mean, to a lesser extent,
Flash,
Green Lantern, Green Arrow. Mm-hmm. I mean, Green Arrow TV show is great. Flash TV show is great. Yeah. And then after that, but, you know,
Titans,
yeah, right.
A bunch of
GLA,
stuff.
But we know what they don't. They're not gearing it enough to kids. Like when I was a kid, you used to be able to watch Challenge of the Super Friends. You'd have Batman and Superman versus Lex Luthor and Gorilla Grodd and all those characters. You know. And they don't have that anymore. They've got some Tiny Titans and they've got some Batman adventures, but it doesn't have this. It doesn't seem to be that it has the same pull on the younger audience that it used to.
Right.
But what they're really missing, in my opinion, is Warner Brothers also owns all those licensing products devoted to the Warner Brothers cartoons.
Yes,
Bugs
That's
Bunny,
the gold mine that they're not mining.
Yeah, Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and all that kind of stuff.
I'm gonna say. I don't know how to say these words, so bear with me. Okay,
I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm not bear, but I'm with you.
you know, the American revolution of the 20th century, the American pop culture revolution of the 20th century, which we're all living right now.
Yeah.
Okay. The creativity, the just the absolute brilliance in terms of, I don't know, I'll just use the word creativity.
Okay, yeah.
I think the apex.
Apex,
yes,
yep.
The absolute pinnacle.
Yeah.
The you could not get better.
Yeah.
What were the Chuck Jones years directing the Looney Tunes cartoons of the mid-50s.
Right.
The brilliance of those things
has
stood the test of time and become timeless.
Yeah.
Whereas some of the Disney stuff is not timeless.
Oh yeah, for
right?
sure.
And the fact that you have pretty well maybe the absolute top point of that art form that could be achieved.
Yes.
Were achieved by Warner Brothers in the 50s through those cartoons.
In a visual storytelling way.
In a, you know, sight gag, storytelling, visual,
you know,
cinematic, all those things.
The only guy I'm going to – so I'm agreeing with what you're saying.
Right.
But the only guy I'm going to include in that is Tex Avery. Because Tex Avery was the guy who, you know, when you think about those crazy cartoons with the eyes bulging out and the tongue wagging,
fair enough,
he came up with that stuff, right?
Right.
So Tex Avery and Bob Clampett and Chuck Jones and all those guys who, like,
that
whole, you know, they were fortunate in a time where nobody they were given a place, an old warehouse, and nobody gave two craps about what they did.
It was a dump. Partaking in things you shouldn't partake in.
Yeah, it was a dump.
You know, stoke the creativity.
Absolutely.
And trust me, the creativity was stoked.
It was stoked.
And you cannot get better three-minute segment cartoons than you had at that time.
Oh, no, absolutely.
It's all been downhill since then.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Or it's paid homage to that.
Right.
And here's DC Warner's.
Yeah.
Not being able to cash in on that library.
Well, you know, okay, so again, here's the thing. So... you know, I remember reading stories like years ago, just like they have the Disney stores. Mm-hmm. There used to be in the States, we didn't have them in Canada, but there used to be the Warner Brothers store.
Yeah.
So, and that, they would sell all the Warner Brothers product, all prints and lithographs and stuffed animals and mugs and all that kind of stuff. And they would have the DC stuff there as well. So they'd have Alex Ross Superman prints and they would have all kinds of cool stuff. And then one day they decided, you know, it wasn't making enough money. They wanted to try selling stuff online, and they just got rid of them all. And then, you know, Six Flags, the amusement parks, they kind of push it a little bit, but not really. Not like Disney pushes their amusement parks with stuff.
Well,
like, it just seems like they're not putting out enough stuff.
I don't have the answer. Okay, and I know that Warner's has tried. Remember what's that basketball guy's name that was pretty good?
Michael Jordan.
Space Jam.
Yeah, and they tried him with the Warner guys and stuff like that, and it just didn't work. My point is, Warner's has tried to mine that.
Right.
Unsuccessfully.
Yep.
And I refuse to believe that, you know, probably the greatest era of cartoons ever can't recapture the imagination of the general populace today.
You know, years
I refuse to believe that.
Years ago, they came out with things like the Tiny Toons, which was little Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
And then they came out with Animaniacs, and they came out with other things.
I used to watch that. You know what? That was popular for us kids.
Yep,
like, we used to watch that all the time.
But where's the merchandising? Like, it just seems like they just sort of...
They
comes
just
made
out, a show, and that was about it.
Yeah, and then that was done, right? Like, they need to keep on pumping this stuff out.
What Marvel's doing very well and better than anybody else is they're monetizing their property.
Yes.
Right? And you know, if you ask me, you know, Warner Brothers' properties, some of them are stronger than the Marvel Disney properties. You know,
for
Bugs,
sure,
Bugs,
for sure,
Daffy, and yet they can't do anything with them. They can't bust through.
Yeah.
the mainstream public consciousness today.
So here's my question for you. Then, so here's my question: is that because we have an impression of what those characters are like, and basically anything that is not those cartoons from the 1940s and 50s, we can't accept. So we can't accept a Space Jam. Maybe we can't accept, you know, the new versions of these characters because it was such a pinnacle. It was such a an apex from the four that, you know what, it's never going to reach it. Why bother going to the well?
Yeah, I don't buy that. I don't buy that. I think you have a starting point, and you have to figure out how to tap that starting point.
Right.
Yeah, they've been trying to do that with like Batman, Superman for how many decades?
Yeah.
Now, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's a consistent point of, let's go back to that well. Superman can be on tops again.
Yeah,
you know?
Superman is another example. I'd equate Superman really with Bugs Bunny.
Right,
just absolute iconic characters that just they can't seem to find the delivery system for those characters to the general populace that will be embraced.
Right,
and Superman, you know, and I've said this before. It's odd that the largest entertainment company in the whole world by far, Disney, has a logo of a character that is irrelevant.
They barely use, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was only a couple.
Mickey Mouse ears. You know, you ask a kid, you know, Mickey, they don't even know who the hell Mickey Mouse is.
Hey, you know what? I taught a course years ago on iconography, so icons and that kind of stuff. And now, this might not be true today. This is a few years ago. But the number one recognized symbol in the world was the Christian cross.
Mm-hmm.
The number two recognized symbol was the Mickey Mouse ears.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And what does that tell you about our philosophies, what we find important, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly enough, so, you know, but even though Disney has not released a Mickey Mouse cartoon in a long time, they made one a few years ago, but before that it was like decades, right?
Right.
You know, everybody still knows who Mickey Mouse is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So why can't they do that with Warner Brothers?
Yeah.
Right,
you know, it's a conundrum.
It is.
That,
it is.
The Warner Brothers has to dig out of.
Yeah,
basically.
It is. It is.
All right.
All right. Listen, let's. You know what? I think we need to have a quick musical interlude there, if we can get our
here,
if we can get Shecky to load us up one, if that's okay with him.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's hear what you got planned for us.
The Lone Ranger. Mario Silver, away! A fiery horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty Mario Silver, the Lone Ranger. With his fearless Indian friend Tonto, the daring and resourceful masked rider of the plains, led the fight for law and order in the early West. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear. From out of the past come the thundering hoofbeats of the great horse Silver. The Lone Ranger rides again. Hail Silver! Away!
Hey ho! Silver Age comics. You know, Chris, I recently saw, what's that movie again?
Lone Ranger, yeah.
With, what's the guy's name?
Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp. Thank you, Chris.
What'd you think?
I'm glad you're here. That was a piece of kife. That was garbage.
You know what?
Here's my problem with it.
What was it?
You can go out into Arizona.
Yeah.
And you can go, this is a nice little scenic vista.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's film here.
Yeah.
Right? No. They did is, let's spend $22 million and make this set that looks fake.
I know.
And film here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was overproduced.
Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah. I didn't think it was that good of a movie. I thought Johnny Depp was mediocre.
What's the pirate guy?
Yeah, Jack Sparrow.
Jack Sparrow.
He was Jack Sparrow
to a minor degree. Yeah.
You know, I didn't think it was that good. And I thought I can't remember the guy's name, whoever played Lone Ranger, I don't think he was that great. It wasn't memorable to me anyways.
Yeah. I think he's like an up and comer in like the Hollywood circuit. It wasn't Ben Affleck.
Anyways, you know what? I also didn't think it was that great.
It was terrible.
But again,
it was terrible.
But okay, so you know what? This relates perfectly to what we were talking about. Again, here's a character that's been around for 100 years,
mm-hmm.
Lone Ranger. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows who he is practically.
Yeah.
Yet, you know, never got a dinner. Can't sell a movie. Can't get a comic book going. Can't do anything.
And that was a Disney movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey,
that's why they hired Johnny Depp, because he. Johnny Depp, I think it made money right now.
It made a little bit of money, but it was also directed by the same guy that did Pirates, so it was all kind of a big thing.
It stylized was the same.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you right now, okay, I'm going to put this
out there.
I'm going to put this out on the line.
All right.
Let's hear it. Interwebs and on the radio waves. Mm-hmm. Johnny Depp took Disney from what Disney used to be in the 90s and everything.
Yeah.
And Johnny Depp started them on the path of what they are now, the big, massive conglomerate that's buying out Marvel.
Yeah, I disagree, too. I disagree.
Pirates of the Caribbean, 2001, I believe, was the first time that Disney really realized the raw power of live-action film and how many hundreds of millions of dollars a single movie can bring in with the right material and the right licensed property and the right actors playing your character.
I got two words for you. Haunted Mansion.
Disagree.
With Eddie Murphy, it did terribly. What they were trying to do was create movies out of all their amusement rides at the parks.
Yeah.
And they did great with Pirates of the Caribbean, and then they tried with Haunted Mansion.
They left in with Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
But I'm saying...
When they bought Marvel, that's when it all started.
Yeah.
Hold on. When I say Johnny Depp started and did that for them, you giving me a dud now, that doesn't take away the fact that Johnny Depp started that.
No, you're absolutely right.
Well, you told me no.
You're absolutely right. I'm just saying they got lucky with
that.
Johnny Depp was a one-off.
They got lucky with that. That's all.
Eddie Murphy's good.
Was a one-off.
Eddie Murphy's good when he's cussing and talking about his peoples and
singing Roxanne.
In the family shows, he's not that stellar.
No,
so you know what? Them banking on him to do a Family Man show.
Family Man show.
Yeah. Never got a dinner.
Never got a dinner. Listen, we have got so much to talk about, and we have like 8 minutes left.
Wow.
And listen, speaking about Marvel things that they do right, it just keeps on going because Marvel is going to unveil an Ant-Man prose novel.
Prose. Like as in word.
As in a novel.
As in a novel.
Not a graphic novel.
Right, as in a novel.
This
follows the Avengers novel, prose novel.
So
it just came out, or is coming out. What's it called? Everybody Wants to Rule the World by the Avengers.
Yeah. So hold on. So Marvel announced Avengers Everybody Wants to Rule the World, which will be released
in the spring.
Uh-huh. And then they're going to have Ant-Man Natural Enemy, which will be released in June, weeks ahead of the July 17th debut of Marvel Studios' Ant-Man movie.
Okay, so let's dissect this a little bit. Let's flip it in a pan, turn it over.
All right,
and
let it simmer.
Cut it open a little bit and have a look inside.
Okay.
So Marvel is going, wow. You know, man, we can't do no wrong. We got to get Ant-Man's popular.
No, that's not necessarily true. But anyways,
okay, Ant-Man might
will be popular.
Yeah, will be popular.
Yeah.
Let's get some Ant-Man comics lined up. Let's get some Ant-Man graphic novels lined up. Let's get some Ant-Man Lego lined up.
Yeah.
I don't know what the heck they're
lining up. Yeah, yeah.
But hey, let's get some Ant-Man prose lined up.
You know,
where the hell does that come from?
I think that they're just riding that wave,
yeah.
And they're just figuring, you know what, we're going to put out as much crapola that we can possibly put out.
I don't know.
Unless there's a great story there. I don't
know. You know what?
If you get a good artist. Yeah.
It's just a type of artist. Yeah. It's their craft.
Yeah.
You know,
he's a wordsmith.
We both know you were wrong with what you're saying.
You know what? That's what I was actually thinking about that today. I hate it when people refer to like acting and all that kind of stuff. How did you get into your craft?
Yes.
I've honed my craft.
The theater stage.
I say. Anyways, listen, you guys acting. Anyways,
yeah.
Remember,
there's a great. Hold on, back it up.
Olivier,
back it up.
Beep 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 beep.
So Laurence Olivier's in
Brock Lanahan.
No. Laurence Olivier's in The Marathon Man.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The Marathon Man with Dustin Hoffman.
You're right, right.
About like an old Jewish Holocaust survivor.
Yes.
That. Anyway, there's a Nazi kind of, and Olivier plays, I believe, a Nazi doctor.
He plays a Nazi kind of
dentist.
Yes, yes, right? Yes, that's right.
And so there's a scene where Olivier is inflicting terrible pain
on Dustin Hoffman
through dental kind of poking into the nerves.
Yes,
and he's like excruciating pain because Hoffman's brother is some sort of spy.
Right.
Roy Scheider.
Right.
Roy Scheider,
right.
Sorry, from Jaws.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Scheider's right, yeah.
Yeah, Roy Scheider. And so Hoffman being the method actor.
Yes.
Going, you know, from the De Niro school, the method
right,
actor.
Right, right, right.
stays up for 2 days, drinks, just abuses his body.
Nice.
And he walks in because he wants to look the part of a haggard guy being tortured, right? So he's method acting.
Yes.
He's living the part
yeah.
of being absolutely dilapidated and,
yeah.
and whatever. And Olivier sees him walking in, and he turns to Dustin Hoffman. He goes, "Well, why don't you just try acting, my dear boy?"
I've heard a similar story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, Olivier was always about like, "Well, just act it
just
out, like,
act it out,
yeah,
my dear boy."
Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't you
yeah.
just try acting? Why lose sleep, son? You know, it's like you might feel like an idiot, right?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell did I just stay up for 2 days for? Sorry, sir. You know. But anyway, teach his own.
Yes, absolutely.
But,
yes.
Yeah, but I think it's great. I think why not? Like Shecky said, though, if it's a good story, Ant-Man as a book, as a character, would lend well to prose, I think, if it was done in a science fiction-y sort of way.
Yeah, yeah, I
can
see that.
You know what I mean?
And you know what this reminds me of? Back in 1989, was it, when the first Batman movie came out?
Mm-hmm.
At that time, there was actually a lot of novels coming out
about Batman.
About Batman.
Right.
And so I think the tables have turned. I think Marvel is just, hey, you know what? Let's just start putting out as much stuff as we can possibly put out because people are all involved in all that stuff and we want to get it going. So let's just put out whatever we can. So
hey, listen, when the Ant-Man Natural Enemies come out, pick it up and read it. And enjoy
yes.
Different variations and interpretations
yep.
of your character. Yep.
And although it won't be a graphic novel or a comic book, maybe your local comic book store might stock it for you if you ask.
I hope so. I hope so.
Hey, listen, we have just a couple minutes left. Chris, I know we have to talk about, we promised the listeners.
Christmas.
Christmas.
Yeah, geez, yes.
The Christmas at your local comic book shop.
Yes, okay. So last week we talked about what to get for an 8-year-old kind of thing. So what are we going to talk about today? Let's talk about what to get for – how about the comic collector who has everything?
The comic collector who has everything.
What do you get – a guy like me.
Yeah.
Right? So I've owned it all. I've sold it all. I've owned –
you know what you get for a comic collector that has everything?
Right.
And the great part about comic books and the canon of comics and the great story arcs that have been told over the days and the great runs that have been printed and stuff is a lot of those are available in beautiful bound collections.
Completely agree. You know what?
And the joy of picking up, because you and I have both read comics out of the comic thing.
Yeah.
I better be careful how I read this because this is worth like $50.
Right.
Book,
yep.
You know? And you're all like pins and needles. Should I read it? Should I not?
Yeah, I don't want to pick it up.
Screw
you know
that.
Yeah.
You know, Chris loves Captain America. One of the best Captain America storylines is now available in a beautiful deluxe bound
hardcover.
You know, get that for your Captain America fan. They will love picking it up and not worrying about. The reproduction is beautiful.
Yep, it's true.
The production value.
It's almost too good sometimes.
Yeah. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
And just the value of it, and you're picking it up for a couple bucks an issue, what
works
out to be.
Yep,
right?
That's right.
Four or $5 an issue.
Yeah.
Which would you pay for anyway.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
And that is a good gift for people that are comic book collectors, because you're not buying what you don't buy. Comic book collectors is a collectible comic book,
right? Because
you'll always get it wrong,
and they may already have it, or
they
who knows
have
what.
It, or
like,
they may not want it. Every guy or girl is particular about their collectible comic.
Yep, books. Yep, that's right.
They have a certain condition. They have
that's
a,
right.
I don't know, or they didn't want that issue,
or
I only collect this, or this. You can never get it right.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
And above and beyond going out and buying a gift certificate or something like
that. If you want to actually have something that's kind of fun. You know what's great about a graphic novel is that they can open it up, and there's always a lull around Christmas time where you can just relax by yourself, and now you've got something to read and enjoy.
This is the good part. Listen, this is the good part. Oh. Real quick. So you're the dad or the mom. Okay, let's play the dad because I'm the dad.
Yeah.
Sure, I'll be the mom. Yeah.
Okay, sure thing. You were last night.
Hey-o!
So Christmas mornings comes. And everybody's happy, and everybody opens their presents. The kids are ecstatic. They open their thing. after you spend about 19 flipping hours putting together the stupid things that you got down.
Yeah.
Then you can unwind and relax.
That's right.
And you crack open that graphic novel.
Yep.
You don't have that gift to go, oh, I got to wait till tomorrow to go buy something.
Two days from now.
And you just, crack open that bottle of scotch.
There you go.
And you pour yourself a nice tall one.
Nice.
And you open up that graphic novel and you really enjoy it.
Nice tall one of scotch. I like that.
And my whole thing was I disagree with both of your agreement to your gifts. The perfect gift to that person is the bottle of scotch.
Hey.
And then they can relive and reread their books with the bottle of scotch.
All right, Okay. Listen, you know what? I agree, but completely disagree. Walt?
Hey, Comic Culture, produced by Shecky Feldstein, engineered by Chris Owen. Always listen to us on 93.3 CFMU, McMaster Radio, comicbookdaily.com, getthepointradio.com. Everybody, enjoy your week and go visit your local comic book
shop. Have yourself a great day.